If you want to get a glimpse into what it's really like to be an elite athlete and a mother of young children, today is the episode for you. I sat down with Amanda Basham, who is an ultra runner and a very decorated one at that, and somebody that I look up to and am inspired by. We discuss strategies for managing disappointment, expectations, and the mental toughness required to persevere as both athletes and mothers. Plus, the complexities of co-parenting while pursuing elite sports, highlighting the importance of flexibility, communication, and self-care. Welcome to the Sonia Looney Show. This is a podcast about high performance and well-being, and I'm your host, Sonia. And if you're new around here, I am a world and multi-time national champion in mountain biking, and I still race professionally. I'm a health and mental performance coach, a writer, a mom of two little kids, and I own my own business. And if you're not new around here, welcome. I'm so glad that you're back, and I'm so grateful that you are part of this awesome community and that we get to learn and grow together.
I think, though, the biggest thing that has helped me with my mental part in ultra running is not that it necessarily makes me more tough, but I don't want my kids to see that I just give up. And it sounds super like cliche and corny and whatever, but they understand so much at such little ages. Like even our three-year-old, I have to watch everything I say and everything I do because she repeats all of it. And she's so like, she knows. You think that kids don't pick up on stuff at that young of an age, and she knows everything. And even understanding that we don't feel good on a run or that we just quit, like she gets it. And I think one of the biggest things you can teach your kids through sport is like to just not give up when it's hard. And that totally applies to like everything in life.
I'm so excited about today's episode, and it's been a long time coming. Between Amanda and I, we have four toddlers, three and under. So you can imagine the scheduling challenges and with our goals as elite athletes and our race schedules. So it was such a gift to get to sit down with her and record this episode. Before I dive in, I'll give a quick update on me. So right now I'm in the middle of a digital school week. So it's about 30 hours on Zoom. We do these immersions every month where it's 3 days in for my Master's of Applied Positive Psychology program that I'm in at the University of Pennsylvania. And this weekend we are learning about many fascinating things like how to respond whenever people give you good news to build your relationships. We're learning about high quality connections to foster social cohesion and performance and well-being in the workplace and with people all around you. We're also learning about how to have grit, but also how to know what is too much effort and when you should change your situation so that you don't have to always be relying on willpower. We also are learning about literature and how literature affects well-being, and it's been really interesting. In fact, I recommend the book Wonder Works if you are interested in the science of how literature works and how it impacts our mind. I could go on forever about that stuff. I love positive psychology in this program that I'm in. And this may not seem like a big deal, but I've been healthy for a couple of weeks in a row, which has not been the case since October with one kid in preschool. It's been a real challenge to have any consistency with my training, let alone to train at all. So I'm very excited that I have been able to start building for the first time. I feel very encouraged by that and feel very fulfilled that I'm able to push myself again and connect with myself back in the way that I used to. So it's been kind of a long process, and I'm sure I'll get sick again, but it's like keeping the pilot light lit. And then whenever you can, adding fuel to the fire to build your engine. I've written about this a lot on my Instagram account at Sonia Looney about the challenges of having young children and pursuing big athletic goals where staying healthy is key for consistency, and yet you cannot stay healthy because you have young children who are in daycare or in preschool. So it's been an interesting mental gymnastics for me. There's been good times, but there's been times I've been very discouraged and wanted to give up. So I'm glad to be coming into spring and out of that tough winter that I've had. My first race of the year will be the Transylvania Epic Mountain Bike Race. It's a 5-day mountain bike race in State College, Pennsylvania, that will be following my graduation in Philadelphia. I'll be done with my master's program officially at the end of July when I'm done with my thesis, but I'll be done with all of my courses in May. So I'll be doing the Transylvania as a celebration of that. I did that race several years ago. Lots of fun stories and challenging stories from that race. But the gist of it is that I had all these bad things happen to me. I had third-degree burns on my body from a cooking accident that happened right before the race. I had all these challenges even getting to the race. And then I managed to overcome all of that, and I was winning the race for several days in the leader's jersey until I crashed and broke my frame. And then I was able to borrow a bike from a spectator and finish the stage, but then I received a time penalty for accepting outside support, even though the bike was, they very generously provided me with their bike, but it definitely was not a racing mountain bike. So that is not a happy ending, but I was still really proud of that experience. And the race itself is amazing. And the race promoter, there's a new race promoter now. He also does the Pisgah stage race that I won last year. So I'm really excited to return to the Transylvania Epic. I have no idea where my fitness will be, but I'm doing my best to build it back as much as I can after all the challenges that I've been encountering. So enter in, you know, more real stories of challenge, support, and motherhood with ultra runner Amanda Basham. And let me talk about her now. So becoming a mother is a transformative experience. As you know, if you followed anything that I have put out into the world, or if you follow any mom or your mom yourself, you know it changes your life. But for elite athletes like Amanda Basham, it also presents unique challenges when it comes to pursuing athletic dreams. I was so honored to sit down with Amanda. She resides outside of Boulder, Colorado in the mountains, and we've been trying to do this for a while, and I was so happy to hear her story of returning to competitive sports after having children and the profound lessons she's learned along the way. This was personally meaningful to me because a lot of us are out there pushing ourselves, trying so hard, and we don't get to hear other people's stories, and we just get to see the highlight reel of how easy it looks for everybody else. So getting to hear that it's not easy for everybody else and that we are all human beings was just really inspiring for me. Amanda is a professional trail runner and endurance coach with an inspiring path in the world of ultra running. We explore the profound changes in training, racing, and life schedules that come with becoming a mother. And Amanda shares her experiences returning to racing postpartum, from battling self-doubt to navigating the lack of support for postpartum athletes. Amanda sheds light on the often overlooked struggles faced by mothers in athletics. Amanda is a well-decorated athlete. She has been at the elite level for quite some time, winning the 50-mile USATF Trail Championships in her very first race as a professional. Since then, Amanda has competed in some of the most prestigious trail races around the world, including Western States 100, UTMB, CCC, Tarawera, and Ultra Trail Cape Town, where she places very high up in the placings, winning or on the podiums. But Amanda's journey extends beyond the trails. She's also a dedicated mother, finding a way to balance training and racing while raising two daughters alongside her partner, Justin Grunewald, whom she met during a race. For Amanda, co-parenting and solo parenting while pursuing elite sports demanded flexibility, communication, and strategic planning. She shares her effective strategies for maintaining harmony between her roles as an athlete and as a mother. Some key takeaways you'll hear today is returning to sports after having kids and how challenging that can be both physically and mentally. You'll hear about the lack of support from sponsors, races, and in general for postpartum athletes. And that's something that I have been a voice about. If you've missed my bench documentary that was filmed back in 2020, I'd love to share that with you. You can watch it now for free. It has won many awards around the world at film festivals. So you can watch that. It's linked up in the show notes. Benched is what it's called. We talked about how having a positive mindset and not giving up can help overcome mental hurdles. And that is where true resilience and grit and perseverance come from, is in the darkest moment when nobody believes in you, to still be able to believe in yourself. And I get a bit choked up even saying that because, man, I've had many of those. Amanda and I talk about flexibility and communication that are needed between your partner, with you and your partner, when you're trying to balance parenting and competing, and it's no easy task. And we share real stories of challenge and success that can inspire and support other mothers. I've also linked up in the show notes a podcast episode that I think would be really relevant to this called Work, Parent, Thrive with Yael Schoenbrunn. Yael writes about parenting, and she is an ACT psychologist. Her book that came out, I think it was a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, talks about how parents can have all of these different roles and how those roles can actually enrich parenthood instead of take away from it. So I highly encourage you to either check out that book, Work, Parent, Thrive, or to listen to the podcast episode. Okay, so enough for me. Let's dive right in with Amanda Basham. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I did. Amanda, it's so fun to finally get to chat. Like, we've been in touch through this whole motherhood journey, and we finally are connecting. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I know it's been a while, but I'm, you know how it is. Everything kind of changes last minute sometimes, and
absolutely,
it's hard to get on the same schedule.
Yeah. So I guess there's so many things I can ask you because you are a highly accomplished ultra runner. I'm a new ultra runner. So it's fun to hear about, you know, hear podcasts that you've been on and learn from you. You also are a mom to two young toddlers. Can you tell us how old your kids are?
Yeah. So our older one just turned 3 2 days ago. And then our younger one is 21 months. So yes, they're very close in age.
They're very close. What was that like having two that close together?
You know, at the time, it was really hard. We didn't plan the timing for the second one. And so I actually had went to the CCC 100K and I found out I was pregnant 2 days before.
Oh, wow.
So I started the race, but I had stressed myself out so bad. I lasted 40 miles and then I finally called it. But yeah, it was a little shocking at first. And then it was very difficult to be pregnant with a toddler. And then it was even more difficult to have a newborn with a toddler that close together, especially because our older one didn't walk for a while. She was 18 months before she walked. And so trying to breastfeed and pick up both kids, like, it was just hard. And I solo parent a lot. Justin works in Minneapolis and we live in Boulder, Colorado. So he's gone for a week at a time, just so I'm here. And we had no help for a long time until about a year ago. Yeah, so it was rough, but you know, you just figure it out and you get through it. And now it makes it seem so easy.
Yeah, it's so funny. I was thinking about this just this morning, how you can look back at things that you did and you think to yourself, I don't even know how I did that. And that's pretty amazing. But then when you're doing it, it doesn't feel like it's so amazing. And it just feels like chaos.
Yeah, a pure chaos. I mean, other people would be around and be like, how do you even survive? And my motto, kind of jokingly, but also serious for a long time, was surviving, not thriving. you know, because I felt like I just had to laugh about it. Otherwise, I just got angry sometimes, you know? And so if you just like laugh about it and it just is what it is and it doesn't last forever, it's just a lot easier to handle. And yeah, you get to know and it's like, I got through it.
I definitely want to talk about some of those things because I don't know about you, but it seems like for a lot of athletes, there is the way that you did things as an athlete before you had kids, and then there's the way that you do things as an athlete after you have kids. So can you walk us through just some of the key highlights of your racing career before you had kids and how you, when you look back at your training and your life, like how you sort of identified how you did things?
Yeah. You know, I've only a very short amount of time did I ever live the like full athlete lifestyle where I didn't work another job. I was just an athlete, just me. I guess I always had my dogs though. So in a way, I was always busy already, and I'm sure that like made it easier to handle things now, but it's so different. Like you can be, and I'm sure you know this, you can be slammed busy, but if it's you and a million business calls or whatever it is, plus training, that's so much different than you and two kids, plus trying to train and do all of those things for your business and all of the other stuff, because you're full time taking care of other people and it's not on your schedule. Like it, you can't really say, oh, at 8 a.m. I'm going to do this. And by 8 p.m. I'm going to be in bed and all of those things. So life before kids was super busy just trying to get to that pro athlete lifestyle. Like I knew I wanted to do that, but I worked a normal job all the way until March 2019 and various jobs, but the last one before I quit and was a full-time runner, I was working for iFit, a normal 9-to-5. I also was coaching 40 athletes as my own business. I had 3 dogs. So it was pretty busy. I mean, I would be up at 5 a.m. doing 20-mile runs before I got in the office and be at the office all day. Sometimes I'd double and lift on my lunch break. I'd coach my athletes and then I'd go to bed and wake up and do it all again. But I slept a ton and I was able to go to bed when I wanted. I was able to eat what I wanted, when I wanted. And after kids, you know, a lot of that stuff changes. So it makes the recovery part, even though you may be just as busy as before, it makes the recovery part a lot harder. And I'm sure you've probably noticed that.
Yes. And also the way that you choose races is probably, well, for me, it's very different. Like it's completely changed for me. Like how does your selection of races that you do, or maybe your sponsors are dictating that, but how has that changed for you, if at all?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a lot more challenging because I remember pre-kids, I think 2019, I went to like 9 different countries or something. And this sport, and I'm not sure about mountain biking quite as much, but ultra running is really international. Like you travel a ton. And even if it's not international, even going to the East Coast or to California even, it's like the travel part makes it pretty difficult. And we have tried to take our kids to most things because it's usually easier than finding someone to watch your children 24/7. And, you know, then you just cannot prep for a race the way that you probably should. But it is what it is. I guess when we were first trying to plan that and figure out, like, how do we go to all these races? What do we pick? Do we only race like backyard races, even though they're not as competitive and they're not really what sponsors want? We decided not to do that and to take the kids because I figured going and being a little less ideal or a lot less ideal and maybe performing not as good is better than not doing it at all, is how I thought of it. So we went to a ton of stuff. We've tried to do things. I think a mistake we've made is that we've tried to do things a little too similar, but with the kids. And then what we're trying to do this year is change that a lot by maybe them not coming quite as much. And maybe Justin and I kind of splitting up what races we do and that sort of thing. So it's all kind of trial and error.
Yeah. So it sounds like before you had kids, you were racing internationally. Mountain biking is also a pretty international sport. And that was similar for me. I was going to maybe 5 countries a year, racing my bike and picking wherever I wanted. And now I don't really race outside North America, just because I don't want to take my kids to some of these. They're usually like 7-day races and they're not really hospitable places for little kids. Yeah. So you have to change the way that you do things. And that can be really challenging. Like you mentioned, well, you could do the backyard races, but that might not be as satisfying for you, or your sponsors might not like that, or you could go to a travel to a race and know that you might not perform as well. And that is hard too, to do that. So like, how do you mentally deal with that whenever you go to a race and you know that like you're not going to get the right sleep. You're going to wake up in the morning and try to get ready for the race, but there's going to be kids around. Like, it's just not going to be the same. So like, how do you mentally set yourself up for the start line whenever that's going on?
Well, you know, I'd say you can't like I said, with the laughing it off part, I mean, that's kind of just how I've had to look at it. You know, now we get better sleep. We can kind of control things a little more. But that was only, I mean, within the last month or so. You know, it's like stuff with little kids changes so quick. So even this past summer when we were racing, like we went to UTMB, we slept terrible. Like our oldest kid did not want to sleep in her room. She decided she was not going to sleep in her room by herself anymore. She had to sleep with us. And doing that at an Airbnb and trying to get her to sleep in her own room was like just impossible. So with stuff like that, we're like, UTMB is a huge, important race. And it was so just a terrible setup. We just bad recovery the whole time and pretty stressful. And I think this is much easier said than done, but I've had to just be like, you know, we at least get to be here. And I think a lot of people wouldn't even have the opportunity to be here still. And I just know too that it's so temporary. It changes so quickly. And even in a year from now, probably none of this will even apply. And, you know, I would just rather be there. Like I said, I'd rather be there, be stressed out, be more tired and do it than to not be there at all. And so I think that that helps my mindset. I mean, it's definitely not all like sunshine and butterflies. I've had rough moments, but I don't know. I think it's just helped me be better in those tough moments. Like UTMB, for example, I was having an awful day. I mean, I think because of a lot of the prep that went into it, it was like just bad recovery, bad sleep. I was so tired when I even started. But I think knowing like, I mean, this sucks. Like I'm in the moment of UTMB, like this sucks. It hurts. It's so hard and it should have been better. But also I've just like, I can totally do this. It's just going to take longer than I wanted it to take. And I've had to have that attitude with so many things. I think that helps, you know, whether it's like you have that attitude in running and it applies to life or vice versa. It's like, it really helped me get through that race. Like all of these experiences that I've had with my kids and not having ideal moments. So yeah, I think to get back to your question, I kind of just go back to my thought of like, this is temporary and it sucks, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah. Like you're leading with perspective, gratitude. And also one of the things of pessimism, one of the elements is actually thinking that something's going to last forever. So like thinking something's temporary, that's hard, is actually one sign of optimism of a few different signs. So yeah, like it sounds like you have a really important perspective for being able to go to these things. And I hear you, like there's lots of times you're like, okay, well, it's not going to be how it used to be, but I want to be there and I'm going to get through this and it's going to be worth it. And we get to set this example for our family and hopefully inspire other people too.
Yeah. Well, and it's really crazy to me how many, I mean, I totally get it, but it's really crazy to me how many women do not compete after having kids. But it's so hard. It's insanely hard. And the lack of resources is insane. And we're in 2024 and I'm saying that. Like imagine even 5 years ago or especially 10 years ago, it was like, I could see it being or feeling at least almost impossible because sometimes it feels like that now. Mm-hmm. And that's even with people thinking they're so progressive and have all these like pregnancy deferrals and whatever. But a lot of this is so brand new, mm-hmm. which is insane. And then something that I've found too is that people, you know, there's not a lot of action to support women with the postpartum period. There's a lot of like, oh, good for you, you know, pat on the back. There's not really any like actual help, not a lot of it. And so we're like doing this on our own. And then if you don't perform well, it can feel or it can seem to sponsors or other people like, oh, like this doesn't work after kids, you know? So there's a lot of challenges to it. It's really hard. And I get why people don't keep doing it, but that's, I think, another motivator for me almost, because like, I'm going to do this. It's going to work out. And I mean, I think my stoke level and my love for the sport helps that too, but yeah, it's just hard.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that. Cause I think that it can look easy, you know, if someone like looks on Instagram or something like that, and you're right. Like changes are happening where women are getting more support if they want to be athletes and continue doing their sport, but this is new and it still has a long way to go. And a lot of us are doing it like with, and, if you want to bring your family, that balloons the cost of going to an event. And I think from a sponsorship perspective, or even like a race perspective, whoever is supporting you to go to the race, what a cool example that you're setting. And also a lot of these brands' customers are going to be people who have families. So I think that it would behoove these brands to actually spend more money on moms, because those are the people who are, I mean, everybody is setting a great example, but women who have kids who are at these races are setting good examples for all the other people that don't believe that they can do it. And that also supports those brands, because then people can relate with the people who are representing their brands more.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I think too, I see all the time with other female athletes that it's not like they don't want kids, but they're a little scared to because of this just lack of support. And it may seem like, well, I can't really do that. Or who knows if I'll be able to do that afterwards. And so I think just being out there and showing people, even if it's not perfect, probably more so if it's not perfect, will just help kind of everyone.
Yeah, that was something that I was really concerned about when deciding to have kids is, I know I there weren't very many mountain bikers who had kids and continued racing. Like I didn't know anybody with a baby. or actually, no, I know one person with a baby, but I don't think she was racing anymore. So I didn't know if it was possible. I didn't know if anybody would even support me, if people would even care what I was doing anymore, like relevance and all those things. And my story hasn't actually been a positive story when it comes to support and all those things after having kids. Like, I know I'm setting a good example, but it's not like a Disney story. But I think that setting the example is the important part, and it's hard to be the trailblazer sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think all of mine has been positive either. Is that dinging? My text messages?
I can barely hear it. I only heard it once.
Okay, sorry. I'm not sure how to shut it off, so I'll start. Mine has not been totally positive either, and it's really frustrating. So I feel like I've worked so hard for this year to come back with two kids who are really close together and perform, I'd say, pretty good, knowing how hard it is to race postpartum and everything. But I didn't get that kind of reaction from a lot of people, sponsors, races, whatever, you know, when we come into contract season and that sort of stuff starts getting discussed. And, you know, that's really, I mean, it's really disappointing and really difficult because, I mean, back to all this like pregnancy deferral and policies and whatever, it's like, in my opinion, if brands are going to support people through pregnancy, which they clearly have to because the world would not survive without people having children. But if they're going to support people through pregnancy, they have to support people through postpartum also.
Yeah,
and
afterwards.
That's not just like, yeah, it's not like, okay, you had this baby, now get to back to how you were. It takes a while. I mean, if every brand had a policy that was completely supportive and fair, I would say it'd be a 2-year postpartum period, which is really, really hard. I mean, that's hard financially for everyone, but that's just how it is. And it's hard to even get a year out of people, a year of full support. So yeah, it's really challenging. And I think it can be really deceiving, like on social media. I get all the time, people are like, how do you do it? This is so great that you're doing this, blah, blah, blah. Well, I think I'm honestly just willing to work hard and kind of get through a lot of crap because it definitely has not been a smooth process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like you just get back to where you were and then you're just there. It's like peaks and valleys along the way and lots of doubt and lots of time where you're like, well, maybe I should just take some time off because this is just, I'm not making any gains anymore. Or, you know, is this worth it? And it's hard to have these conversations. It's hard to say this out loud because you want to set the example for people that anybody can do it. And I believe anybody can do it, but it's not going to look the way that you think it's going to look. And you have to be resilient and psychologically flexible moving forward.
Yeah. I think for most people, it's not going to look how you envision it, you know, in this like dream world of Instagram. I think the biggest thing is that probably for most people, from what I've heard, is the self-doubt, because it does kind of feel like that constantly. Like, what is the point of this? Like, I'm spending all this time and all this money and whatever, all the things to try to do this thing that I seem to be mediocre at anyways. You know, you like go through those thoughts, whether they're true or not, but it happens. And it just takes a really long time. And it can be really unmotivating. But for some reason, I think my stubbornness has really paid off. And now, I mean, it took me all year, all of 2023, to finally feel like, okay, I feel like I'm actually getting somewhere with this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a while. I mean, especially the day-to-day with two kids, that can feel very slow sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you tell us actually about just your year that you've had, because it seems like there have been some peaks and valleys, and you seem to be like a really open, authentic person, at least from what I see. So I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'll tell anyone anything, maybe too much sometimes, but I just don't think it like benefits anyone to try to make it look better or worse than it was. It just is what it is. Actually, I have to go back. So I had my second kid in April of 23. Is that right? 23. And then I had decided, wait, 22. April 22. Yeah, no. April 22. So I knew I wasn't going to do an ultra that whole year. I just, for the rest of that year, which isn't that long. It's like 7 months or something. So I did my first one in January. And I did that because I had gotten a sponsor's entry into Western States from Buff. And I actually was not allowed to take the sponsor spot because I hadn't ran a qualifier. The reason I hadn't ran a qualifier, even though I've ran the race, I've started the race four times, I've finished twice, fourth both times. And the reason I didn't have a qualifier was because I was pregnant during the window, and then I was less than 6 months postpartum afterwards. And you have to run 100K or 100 miler that's on their list. Like, that's just not going to happen. I mean, I could probably walk it or something, but I wouldn't say it's like the best thing to do.
Can I stop you for a sec? Some of the listeners don't know what Western States is. Can you just tell us what that race is?
Yeah. So Western States 100 is 100 miles from Olympic Valley to Auburn, California. I think it's one of the oldest. I'm pretty sure it's one of the oldest, but it's super competitive. It's kind of become like the Super Bowl of North America in ultra running. And it's a fantastic race. I love it. It's great. It's a very runnable. You start in the like higher alpine out of Olympic Valley, and then it gets pretty quick after the first 50K. And so people just like run it so fast. And it's where all of the top runners have ended up gravitating towards. And so it's kind of become a championship in its own way. It's super hard to get into. I've won my way in once, or I guess a couple of times, because if you get top 10, you automatically come back. But another way of getting in is sponsor entries, and your sponsors can give you a spot, but you still have to meet these qualifier rules. So in order to enter the race, you have to either run 100K or 100 miler on their list. And it's basically to make sure that you can do the race, which makes sense. But coming back to pregnancy and postpartum policies, I was less than 6 months postpartum, or I was pregnant during that entire window. And so there was no exception or rule or anything to say like, I could take my sponsor on entry because I hadn't ran one. And even though I was running one a month and a half later. So I did the Bandera 100K to try to win my way in January 23. I got fourth, top two get in. So I was close, but didn't get it. 5 weeks later, I went to Tarawera 100K. It was also a golden ticket race to try to get into Western. It was probably too much to do. I was only 8 months postpartum then, or 9 months. And it was only 5 weeks after the first one, but I still got eighth at a competitive race.
And tell us how many hours a race, like, because there's people that aren't runners, like they don't realize how many hours that these races take.
So both of these took about 10 hours.
10 hours of running on trails.
And both of these ones. So like with running, they can vary a lot depending on the terrain. And these were both very runnable races. So I was running the whole time, like no hike. Well, should be. I had some rough moments. So I was walking a little bit, but not very mountainous at all, just very runnable. So I then took a break, felt like I needed a break. I went to Broken Arrow and I did the Triple Crown, which is all three of the races. You do Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a VK, a 50K, and a 23K. And I got second there. Then I went to UTMB. And I got 19th. I had a pretty bad day. I thought I could get top 10. I had a lot of rough issues, like I kind of explained. Mainly, I think, from lack of sleep. But I still got 19th. It's super competitive. That has been like kind of the world championship in ultra running. And then I came back and did the Kodiak 100K by UTMB in November, and I won. And that one was where I finally felt like my body, mind, everything felt really good, really normal, not necessarily like pre-kids, but I just felt like I was there. Like I was back. I could do what I was trying to do. But it took a long time. It took until November. So that was my year. And then I called it and kind of took an off season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have so much courage to keep going whenever all these challenges are arising, and I'm curious, like, what does it feel like now to kind of have that feeling of, oh, I'm, you know, after all this time, after years of pregnancies and all these challenges, like now I feel like I'm kind of getting somewhere. Like, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, I mean, it just makes me really excited. It's just taken so much work and so much of like, no, I can do this. Like, I know that didn't show it, but I know, like, no one knows what you can do more than yourself. And I just know, I've just known this whole year. I don't know why. I think it's my stubbornness, but even in the bad moments, I'm like, I know I can do this. Like, I know where this went wrong and how I can improve on it. And I think that's how you get better, is like, even if there's multiple things, you always have to just think about why that race went wrong and what you can do to improve it. And sometimes there's a lot of uncontrollable factors. And then it's like, well, you can't be too upset about that. And then if there are controllable factors, that's even better because you can change it. And yeah, now I just feel like I can finally do what I've been trying to do, and we're getting more sleep and everything. Like, all of this hard work is paying off, which to me is really motivating. It just makes me want to train even harder and kind of show those people who really were just like, you know, this probably isn't going to work out, like, to just show them that it is going to work out. Mm-hmm. And you're going to regret saying that to me. So, yeah, I don't know. I think number one, I have so much like love for the sport. I think that has been the main motivator for staying in it, even through all the crap. Because if you're here doing it for the wrong reasons, you know, mountain biking, ultra running, whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. If you're doing it for the performances only, you're not going to last. Because most of the time, you're not going to win, even if you're doing well, even if you have not had kids and you're the best in the sport. I mean, you're not always going to win, like, more often than not.
And I'm going to intercept and say, I think it's actually harder to be consistent with winning in ultra running than it is with mountain biking, because your body has worse failures in running than it does on the bike. You can get through it on the bike if something's going wrong, but running, if your body fails, like, you, in my limited experience, it just seems like you can't get through it like you could on a bike.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree, even though I have very limited mountain biking experience. So I don't know how much I can say about that, but yeah, it's just hard. But even if you're the best, I mean, there's a couple people in ultra running who are complete outliers, but the majority of people, even if you're really good, most of the time you're not going to win. So you just have to have this, it has to be grounded in love for the sport and what you're doing, or you're just not going to last.
What do you love about the sport?
I really love going to places and seeing it on foot. I do love that. But I think the main thing of, like, you can work really hard to be better. And it's not all, like, it's not really genetically determined in ultra running. Like, so much of it, you have the ability to control. And if you just are willing to work hard, you can do better. And I really like that. And I'm willing to work hard. And I like to see the progress. And I think as an adult, it can be really hard to continue doing things that challenge you. You know, we get kind of like set in schedules and our work and whatever. And you can make it like pretty simple if you want. Not easy, but simple. And I just like the challenge. Yeah. But I think the main thing is that you have the ability to control a lot of it, and to be able to see how much you can actually do physically and mentally is really cool and really interesting.
Do you think that these ultras, especially the 100 milers, are more physical, or do you think they're more mental?
I'd say they're getting more physical, only because it's getting faster, but I guess that could even make it more mental too. But I think honestly, it's almost like a 50-50. Like, you have to be fit, clearly, but there's so much of it that if you can just out tough your competitor, then you can beat them. Even if they're on paper, like, they trained better than you, or they're more fit, or have a higher VO2 max, or whatever it is. Especially depending on the race, like UTMB, where it's very mountainous. You hike a lot. It's a lot of strategy. It's really mental. In my opinion, doesn't that make it more cool? Like, you have so much control over that, even though it can feel like it's impossible in the moment. But even if you can't get it under control on that race, you can learn from it and use it on the next one and see how much better you can do. It's not like that, just is what it is.
Yeah, that's what I love so much about ultra sports in general, is that I think there is mental game in the shorter distance stuff for sure, but the mental game for the long stuff is such a massive part of it. And for me, like, I prefer, of course, nice weather, but when the weather gets terrible, like, I'm happy because I know that I have an advantage because of my mind. And I also am wondering for you, like, do you think that having kids has made you even more mentally tough or resilient in a race?
I think so. I think overall it has, for sure. I don't want people to think it's all contributing to positive stuff, because I think sometimes you can get so drained. There's just no, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, you got to sleep and you got to, take care of yourself. And that's happened a few times, but overall it definitely has. I think though, the biggest thing that has helped me with my mental part in ultra running is not that it necessarily makes me more tough, but I don't want my kids to see that I just give up. And it sounds super like cliche and corny and whatever, but they understand so much at such little ages. Like, even our 3-year-old, I have to watch everything I say and everything I do, because she repeats all of it. And she's so, like, she knows. You think that kids don't pick up on stuff at that young of an age, and she knows everything. And even understanding that we don't feel good on a run, or that we just quit, like, she gets it. And I think one of the biggest things you can teach your kids through sport is, like, to just not give up when it's hard. And that totally applies to, like, everything in life.
Do you think that the mental skills that you have from ultra running make you a better parent?
I think so. Yeah. You have to be, it's all kind of the similar stuff. It's like, you have to be patient, and a lot of times you can't plan for everything. I mean, most of the time it's like, you think you have this grand plan and this is how it's going to go, and you can write it all out and plan it all out for hours, and then it just goes out the window in 2 minutes, and that happens with kids. That's exactly what happens in races. And that's what happens with kids. And you just have to be like, okay, this is what it is. Like, how do I solve this problem in this situation when I thought it was this? And it's like, it goes both ways. It helps me be a better parent, and it helps me be a better runner.
Yeah. I've heard you say that you love competing. Like, you absolutely love it. I do too. Competing is great in many ways, and there's also expectations when you're competing. So how do you manage your expectations when you're out there on the race course, especially for such a long time?
Well, I think it's benefited me and got me into trouble quite a few times because it's so long. Like, I do love competing. So a lot of times people will ask me, why for 19th place are you sprinting the last 3 miles? I'm like, well, because that's what I had in that moment, and I'm going to give it everything I have in that moment. And sometimes, you're walking 30-minute miles, but that's just what the moment is. And then when you have the energy, you do it again. And I think that's what helps me, like, understanding it that way. It's like, take first, second, third, podium, top 10, whatever. Take that all out. You have to even stop thinking about the sponsors, which is hard. And it's all about, for me, just doing your best in every moment that you have through the whole race until you get to the finish. And I think learning where to compete, so it has been a big learning experience for me this year, because I've tried to compete from start to finish, and then I end up just totally killing myself and it doesn't really work. And so it's kind of this balance of strategy and competing with yourself for the first half, and then, like, getting really competitive and competing with the field for the second half. Yeah, I think I honestly try to drop the expectations. I think first coming back from racing with postpartum, I felt a lot of pressure initially. And I don't know if that was through other people or through myself, but the expectations were there and I didn't get rid of them. And so that was one reason I went to Tarawera 100K 5 weeks after Bandera 100K when I was only 9 months postpartum. I wouldn't even recommend someone do that when they haven't had kids. You know, I had these expectations I had set on myself. I had them from sponsors to get a ticket into Western. And that was my opportunity to go. And I really forced it. And so I think what I learned from that experience was you just can't force it. It's like, it doesn't matter what the expectations are. It's okay to have goals and it's even okay to have some expectations. But when it comes to race day, you just can't even think about that. And if you're forcing it, it's just never going to go well. All you can do is like show up with what you have on that day and do what you can do. And you can be competitive, whether you're up front or in the back. It's just like, you got to work with what you have on that day. And that's just what it is.
That's such great advice. I wish I could like fly a plane over everywhere and just drop that. Like, don't force it, because that is such a hard lesson to learn. And it's also hard to know, like, if you're not having a great day, how hard should you go? Like, if you're not trying to force it, cause you want to still push cause you're in a race, but there's only so much you can do whenever you're not having a great day.
Yeah. I mean, I think the smarter thing is to know if you're forcing it or not before you show up to the race. Mm-hmm. So like Tarawera, I didn't have that planned. I had planned Bandera and I thought I could get a ticket there. My second option was to do Canyons 100K in April instead of February. So I had plenty of recovery time. So what ended up happening is I didn't get my ticket at Bandera. And so there was a golden ticket race 5 weeks later in New Zealand that my sponsor asked me if I wanted to do it. I totally forced doing that instead of just going with the plan that I knew was smarter and better for me. And so what I should have done was not, I should have just stayed with my plan and not showed up to that. But even when I got to the race, I almost gave up because I knew I had forced it. And halfway through the race, I realized that and it was going very badly. But I think after an hour of walking and thinking it through, I was just like, you know, I still just got to do what I can do on this day. And it is what it is. And, you know, it doesn't matter that I didn't get top two. Like, that's just is what it is. I can't do anything about it. So after that, though, I had decided to take a break and not do the race in April because I just knew it was going to be forced.
So how do you manage disappointment? Because when you're competing and you're trying to win or you're trying to get a golden ticket and it doesn't happen, like, of course, you're going to feel disappointed. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I think I let myself kind of mope around for a couple of days, honestly, and like feel the disappointment. And usually I kind of set, you know, I don't know if this is the best advice, to be honest, but I kind of set a day where I'm like, okay, this is the day I get over it and I move forward. Like, I'm moving on, we're working on it, we're going to stop moping. But up until that point, I let myself mope about it and be, you know, whatever, kind of sad, disappointed, sitting on the couch, maybe not training as much. And then I get to that day, say it's like the Monday of the new week. I'm like, all right, it's done. I've moped about it. Can't do anything about it. I'm moving on. And that's kind of how I work through it usually. So I think you have to feel those feelings, you know?
That's so interesting. I've actually heard Steve Magnus say repeatedly, like, I don't know if he calls it the 48-hour rule or something like that, but he's like, no matter if you win or if you lose, like, you have 48 hours or however many hours to just feel whatever the feelings are. And then you have a deadline and then it's time to get back to work.
Oh, wow.
So it sounds like that's exactly what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it works. It at least works for me. If you don't really have like a set day to just like move on, it can kind of just linger. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that if you just feel it and you've accepted the fact that you're going to feel it and be upset about it, then you can just move forward a lot easier and get back to work and try to do better.
Can you walk us through like what a day or a month, like I know you and Justin, you have to co-parent and that kind of thing, or a solo parent, sorry. So can you tell us kind of what your life looks like? How are you doing this with your time and managing your time?
Yeah, we have not had much of a consistent schedule pretty much since having kids, really. And a big part of that is his work. So we live in Boulder and he works in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he works night shift as an internal medicine doctor. And so he has a super weird schedule. And it's kind of nice in a way, but kind of also hard when you have kids. So he's gone for a week at a time, and then he's usually home for 2 to 3 weeks and then gone another week. And it's a full 7 days. And so our month, I'd say, is probably 2 weeks of most often it's like 1 to 2 weeks of solo parenting for me and while he's working. And then we have the other 2 weeks to train and hang out with our kids. And when he's gone, now luckily we have a nanny. So I will usually get the kids up in the morning. I'll have a nanny from 9 to 2. And so that's my time to do all of my stuff, whether that's coaching, work, meetings, training, just all of it. Cause I don't count on getting any of that done when I'm solo with both kids. And so then I just know like, that's my cutoff, 2 PM. And then I hang out with my kids the rest of the day. And, you know, we go outside, we play with toys, we watch movies, whatever, all this stuff. And that's pretty much my day every day when he's gone. When he's here, it's a lot more flexible and we can kind of train longer or at different times. I can usually get more work done. We do house projects, a lot of random stuff because we have rentals, and that's just kind of what it is. But every day is not the same. It's all different every day.
And he's also, for those listening, he's also an elite runner, right?
He is, yeah. He is much newer to the scene than me. He's pretty much, so he tried to get into it right before the pandemic, and then the pandemic happened. And so, you know, that delayed everyone a few years. And then, so he's been doing it and been able to race. I don't even remember when races started again. I guess there was like one in 21.
When so he's like been doing when you're like pregnant through the majority of COVID, it's hard to remember when races came back.
Yeah, I know. It was like a total different experience for me because I was just pregnant the whole time. So he's been racing like 3 years or so. And I've been in it probably 10 years. But yeah, so he's a full-time medical doctor and runner when he's not working. So his schedule kind of works well because he just works hard for a week and then he has the rest of the time off to train, hang out with our kids. I think it can seem like it's very simple, honestly. Like we have a very simple life. It's not necessarily easy, but it's like we try to spend a lot of time with our kids. And, you know, they're not in school. They don't go to a daycare. We have consistent childcare now, part-time throughout the week. But when we don't have childcare, like we're hanging out with our kids doing stuff. So I think, it's just really simple. We kind of just train and hang out with the kids.
How do you guys split up duties around the house and cooking and all the other things like that?
You know, what's funny, neither of us have ever liked to cook. And I finally started to learn how to cook only because I felt bad feeding my kids like the same two meals over and over. Like for some reason I didn't care and I can like make up random stuff that I'll eat. But kids are hard. Like toddlers are so hard to get to eat food. And I'm like, you cannot eat mac and cheese for every meal. Come on. And so I finally learned how to cook. And so I probably do more than him, but he does all the grilling. And then random house stuff, we just kind of do at different times. I'm probably pretty equally, except when I'm solo parenting, obviously, then I do a little more.
And then how do you guys decide what races you do? Like, do you do the same races? Do you split off and trade?
So this is part of like how we try to do things and how we are going to do things moving forward. Last year, we mostly did different races, but we both tried to do UTMB. I did the big UTMB, the 100 mile, and he tried to do CCC. And it was so unideal. We even had my mom there helping with the kids. And it was just, it is so hard to have both people so focused on such a big event on the same day, it's just not even worth it. It's like, it's just so much better to split it up, I think. So that's what we're going to try to do this year, is to just split it up and maybe not have everyone go to all the races every time. We'll just go for a shorter amount of time solo, hopefully be more rested and not do them on the same day.
This is such a great idea. Like, my husband, he's not an elite athlete, but he races a lot and he trains 6 days a week, and we try to do the same races, and it's so hard. And we'll have family come, and it didn't even occur to me to like trade off.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll try that.
Yeah. I think, you know, at first I was like, no, you know, we can do it. Like, UTMB is a huge deal in the ultra world. We can both do it. We're going to both be over there. We can make it work. Like, even my mom will be there. But when kids are so little, like, they want their parents. It doesn't really matter that they have other forms of childcare. Like, they just, especially like our little one really wants to hang out with me still. Like, she's young enough that she's just like, mommy, mommy, all the time.
My daughter's the same exact way. Like, always it comes running. I have to like sneak around because she's going to hear. I love it, but it's also like, I don't want to disturb her if I just need to leave and go to the bathroom, like leave my office or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I do the same thing. I try to sneak around. It's like, I eat my food upstairs.
Yeah.
and so you can't really avoid that stuff. And it was just too difficult. I think, so I remember when Justin did Canyons 100K last year, I didn't have any race near it. I had given up doing that one. I was full-time. It was like I'm solo parenting basically, because I was just like, I'll watch kids the whole week so that you can mentally prepare, you can rest, all the stuff. And it just went so much better. Mm-hmm. He got third. He had a great race. He got third. It was so much more relaxing for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, at least for us, like how it's going to be better moving forward.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for that idea.
Yeah.
So you're a self-coached athlete, correct?
Yeah. I have been since 2017.
I think this is unique because I think that most athletes have a coach. And I'm asking you this because for myself, like, I do best when I'm self-coached. Like, I like having an advisory board of people who are like mentor coaches I can ask questions to. But in terms of like writing my schedule and my programming, like, I do best when it's just me doing that because I get overtrained when a coach is trying to train me. It's like, why did you decide to coach yourself?
Well, initially, so from 2017 all the way on to like last year, beginning of 2023, I've definitely wanted to be self-coached. I thought, I know all this stuff. I don't really feel like I need the mental help, which I think a lot of times that aspect of having a coach helps people a lot.
You mean like the motivation?
Yeah, like the motivation, the like helping with self-doubt, confidence, all that stuff. I don't feel like I need that part for whatever reason. So I know how to do a training schedule. It's very simple. Again, not easy, but it's like pretty simple. It's not like there's crazy workouts that people do. Everyone's kind of doing the same thing, at least in running. I don't know how cycling is. Yeah. So I know how to do all that. And my life changes constantly. I'm always traveling. I'm very intuitive. If I'm tired, I have no problem taking a rest day. If I need to cut it short, I have no problem. If I'm like, I feel really good, maybe I should move my workout to today, then I'll do that. Because it's just more beneficial to be like feeling really good when you do a workout, you're going to get more out of it. And if I had a coach, I'd just have to be telling them that every day, even though I know how to move it. So I guess that's why. And then the beginning of last year, after Tarawera had went kind of like terrible, I reached out to a couple of people. And I ended up deciding that my life was just too chaotic for a coach with kids. So it was like all the stuff from before, but on top of that, it was too much chaos. I don't think it would really help to have 3 hours scheduled and then the babysitter doesn't show up and I have 0 hours. You know, I think that would just mess with me more mentally than help. And when like, if I'm self-coached and that happens, I'll move it to the next day. And then it's not a big deal. So I think that's why. I think sometimes it would be beneficial only because I wouldn't have to like talk Justin's ear off about running. But that's really the only reason.
Yeah, I have a running coach, but I actually told him when I started grad school, like, I don't know, you know, I don't want to have a schedule that I have to try to uphold because it's crazy. I'm just trying to survive for the next year. And it's just easier if I can be 100% in control of what I'm doing. And yeah. I think it is helpful though, to have people you can just like bounce ideas off of, because sometimes you can kind of get stuck in your own, get in your own way sometimes with certain things or like a certain way of doing things.
Yes, totally. And like back in the beginning of the year when I decided to do a second 100K 5 weeks later, I think that would have been beneficial because they probably would have said, not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, if I'm the coach, I'm like, I can make it work. And then I realize it's a bad idea later.
Then you learn.
Yeah.
So Amanda, where can we look for you in 2024? What events?
Well, so I was going to do Black Canyon. So again, I'm trying to get a golden ticket into Western States. Black Canyon is one of those. Canyons is the other. I was going to do Black Canyon. I haven't felt like through the holidays I had the type of training I needed to have. So I'm not going to do it now. This is part of my learning. I'm not doing it. So my first race is actually in Italy. It's called Sciacca Trail. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's in Cinque Terre. And that's just for fun. I'm going with my sister. I've been to the race a couple of times and I just love the people there. And so then my first serious race will be Canyon 100K in April. Hopefully getting a ticket into Western States. And then I'm back in for UTMB next year.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always see on social media, you and your sister, and you both have like different color hair, and it just seems like a really cool relationship.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we kind of fought a lot when we were kids, and we even shared a room in high school.
Wow.
Yeah. Because we moved into this tiny house that used to be my grandparents. And so we had to share a room. There weren't enough rooms. But right now it'd be cool. I would love to share a room with her. But at the time it was like, we fought a lot. We weren't really good friends, even though we're really close in age. And then we didn't really become better friends until just later in life, probably after she had her kid. She has one kid. Mm-hmm. And now we're like, I wish she lived next door. Mm-hmm. So we try to do stuff together as much as we can. We're actually going to do this trip to Italy with no kids, just us.
Oh,
so
cool.
Yeah. So it'll be fun.
I guess my last question for you is like, you have signature red hair. Why red?
Well, you know, so my sister's a hairstylist and she kind of begged me to go to this like bright red for years. Well, thank you. I had all sorts of hair. I had black hair in high school. I had blonde. Then I moved on to the purple. It was like a dark purple brownish. So you couldn't really tell it was purple. And then I started doing this red mainly because of her, but it was very toned down. It was like brown with a red tint. And then every time I'd go to her, it'd get a little brighter. And then one day I don't know why I finally decided, but she had begged me for a long time to like go bright, bright. And I finally was like, you know what? I think we're doing bright today. And I just did it and it never went back. And now it's been a long time of bright red hair.
Well, I think it looks awesome. I've actually thought maybe I should try that. Like that looks super
cool.
Oh,
you should. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. I know you're super busy, for coming on the show and sharing a lot of the way that you do things and things that you've been through. Cause I think it's so important to tell the stories. And I did this documentary and I said, like, one of the issues for athlete moms is everybody has these amazing stories. And these stories of like challenge and rising above, and these stories just don't get told. So telling your story, like this is one of the ways to change the world. So thank you for coming on the show and doing that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. I think the few stories that I have heard have helped me in a lot of ways, at least given me like the encouragement to stay in it and try to keep going for it. And so hopefully both of us can help people continue to do that. And we can see more moms competing.
And so where can people find you to follow you?
Mainly Instagram. I have Facebook, but I don't really pay attention to it. So my Instagram is Amanda_Basham and that's it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. That was lots of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode with Amanda Basham and you enjoyed the real talk and the vulnerability and the stories that came with that episode. It takes courage to find your voice to speak about things that are hard. That's something that I am always trying to work on. And Amanda has inspired me to continue to do that too. If you're enjoying this episode, please don't forget to hit that follow button so that you don't miss any future episodes. And we also have an email newsletter at sonialooney.com/newsletter. It's currently on hold, but it will be starting back up again very soon. I had to put it on hold during grad school because something had to give, and it was the newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And thank you so much to my team, Palm Tree Pod and Roma, for making this show awesome and professionally done and helping me. I couldn't do this without them. Life is a team sport, as my friend Travis Macy says. And as always, I'm with you on this journey of personal growth, adventure, and our mission to be better every day. And I'll see you right back here next week.